The darkness around us is deep, says William Stafford. Our congregational theme may be healing and wholeness, but we are fallible creatures. None of us are always honest and true. And when we find ourselves in the wrong, it can feel like we have been broken and exposed. Some of our errors are small, such as, no, we don't need to stop at the store. There's plenty of milk. Some are bigger, such as, don't rush me. We have plenty of time to get to the airport. And some are crucial, such as, I am absolutely sure that that was the man I saw breaking into that house. Jacqueline poked fun at pop culture's habit of the not apology. But what happens to those of us without songwriters and makeup artists to help glorify ourselves no matter our position? How do apologies play out when we're wrong in real life? Like when there wasn't enough milk for coffee, when we missed the flight, or when we learn that the man who sat in jail based on our identification is innocent. Maybe we admit we were wrong and say, oops, you were right, I should have gotten milk. Maybe we imply we were wrong, but don't own it. We would have been at the airport on time if there hadn't been so much traffic, but if you want to be really uptight about it, okay, I guess we can leave earlier next time. Or maybe we refuse to admit we're wrong, even in the face of overwhelming evidence. They let him go just because of DNA and some other dude's confession? That's ridiculous. I know I saw him. The first two examples are probably familiar to most of us because those are typical responses to being wrong. We accept responsibility fully or partially, sometimes very, very partially, but we don't push back against the actual facts. The third example is different because it's about an absolute refusal to admit to being wrong. People who repeatedly exhibit this kind of behavior are psychologically fragile, to borrow a word William Stafford used in the phrase a fragile sequence, a reference to how tender and tentative it can be in this life landscape of trying to get along with one another. If we have a weak ego or bruised self-esteem, admitting we made a mistake can be deeply threatening. Denying and distorting reality is more tolerable than the idea that we messed up and have repair work to do. These kinds of defense mechanisms aren't healthy, but falling back on them does not mean we are bad. It simply means we have some healing to do, so we might be able to face our inevitable transgressions without feeling like we ourselves are the mistake. It wasn't some essential quality of who we are at our core. It was just our specific behavior that was at fault. And after all, we can change our behavior. Restoration after a failure or blunder is important in Judaism. Tikkun olam, Hebrew for world repair, is a phrase that comes from classic rabbinic literature, and especially the work of Isaac Luria, an important 16th century Jewish mystic who lived in Israel, Palestine. In the Jewish tradition, mysticism is called Kabbalah. Tikkun Olam is a fundamental concept year-round, and yet it offers us a special framework for our High Holy Days work of atonement. It gives us, each of us, the opportunity to become agents of world repair. I almost put a little superhero figurine in the Wonder Box to represent each of our capacity to herald this work, but I decided to go with the more spiritually mature items. But it would have been funny. So Isaac Luria's original story about Tikkun Olam was cosmological. God contracted the divine self to make room for all of creation. I love this image, God getting out of the way for us. Divine light became contained in special vessels, some of which shattered. Part of this holy light attached itself to the broken shards, which scattered. They are the basis for evil. Adam, the very first person, was supposed to fix all of this through mystical exercises. But as is so often the case, everything went awry. And now good and bad is all mixed together in the world. The other piece of this jumbled earthly godly confusion is that human souls are also trapped within the shards of divine light. In this historical context, repair means that we are left to complete Adam's job of gathering and putting back the light and the souls. All of humanity has to work together to accomplish this through the contemplative performance of religious acts. So that's what Luria was thinking in the 16th century. Let's update this concept. By the 1950s, in the United States, the phrase Tikkun Olam began to be used to refer to social action work, ethical stewardship of the earth as world repair, feminism as world repair, civil rights, prison abolition, etc. Today, progressive modern Jews and their friends use the term Tikkun Olam to talk about acts of responsibility that happen between people to benefit everyone. Owning our apologies helps heal our world. It is Tikkun Olam. Saying I'm sorry strengthens us and our communities if we can take that risk. This applies even here at the fellowship. This is a human institution. It's far from perfect. Try as we might, we don't always do everything well. I know I don't. I'm sorry for my mistakes. I acknowledge that at times I have failed some of you. I have been quick to assume and slow to listen and ask. I have been led by my fear instead of by love. I may have not seen you when you really needed me to notice you. You may have come here desperate for comfort and not received it. I always try to act with good intention, and yet my impact has sometimes been hurtful. I know this. I'm sorry for my transgressions. If I have harmed you, I hope you will consider accepting my apology. And I invite you to speak with me privately if a more personal declaration would be meaningful. the darkness around us is deep. This is hard, but also incredibly rich. It is not easy to admit that I know I make mistakes. Yet there is a sense of relief in squaring with reality. I don't want to waste energy pretending like I think I'm perfect. I want to refocus on being the best imperfect human minister I know how to be. Apologizing frees me to continue the work of ministry, this great labor of love to which I feel called. In this way, it's a toss-up who an apology benefits more, the person able to get release by offering it, or the one who deserves to hear it. There are layers of discernment here. There are deeply personal motivations, situations, and complexities to be considered. When we first contemplate whether and where and how and why to say I'm sorry. Marshall Bercher has a helpful perspective. He describes himself as a survivor of narcissistic abuse and chronic childhood emotional neglect, and is now an expert in emotional healing practices, codependency, and trauma bonding. He points out that especially for those of us who face life with emotional wounds, knowing when to apologize is not always obvious. His guidelines are as follows. You should say you're sorry when you've crossed a boundary, you become aware that someone felt hurt by an action of yours, and or if you were mistaken about something. But he also asks us to consider when it's not appropriate, when it's not helpful or even fair to offer an I'm sorry. Don't apologize, he says, for taking up space, existing, expressing yourself, asking for something, asserting yourself, being different, disappointing others, or choosing what works for you. Don't apologize for being happy, sad, upset, for having needs or feelings or wants. Don't say you're sorry for being human. This is powerful permission, and yet it needs more complexity. Yes, it is important to not apologize for those things as long as they aren't at the expense of someone else. The crucial caveat is that sometimes privilege and differences in power show up in our interpersonal interactions. Awareness of these dynamics helps us understand what happened and how to proceed. Once, this is years ago when I was in college, my able-bodied friend attended a program that excluded our other friend who uses a wheelchair. It didn't occur to this first friend that this community event, as it was billed, wasn't accessible. Our disabled friend was upset by our mutual friend's comment that everyone who was anyone had been there. The friend who said that ultimately appreciated getting called in and educated about able-bodied privilege. In this case, the apology offered and accepted deepened their relationship. And I personally learned a lot by witnessing this heartfelt late-night kitchen conversation. If my walking friend had refused to say, "I'm sorry," and declined to make amends because no one should apologize for being happy or for disappointing others, we all would have suffered. There would have been no world repair, only what William Stafford lamented in our reading: a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. This is the time of year that Judaism emphasizes how accountable relationships, ones that include apology, can actually help repair the world. This process begins with each of us being gentle with ourselves. We sang about gentleness, and we're going to do it again. To make real this gentleness, we have to be strong enough to assess where we may have missed the mark in the past year. After the service, if you choose to participate in the Tashlik ritual that Mateo helped me enact, I invite you to consider this your chance to take up the spiritual task of discerning where world repair is needed. Ask yourself, have I wronged myself or harmed another this year? What might make it right? Am I grounded enough in my humanity to square up with my errors and embark on a fresh year? Let us hold these questions close.